Put those four fingers up. Fourth and final hour on this gorgeous Thursday afternoon. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts. You should definitely check that out. Hockey Night in Canada. He now
joins us. Soon to be 32.
Soon to be 32, and let's just start with number 32. They made their announcement about an hour ago, even though it leaked out beforehand, that Dave Haxtell will be their first ever head coach. He spent about 3.5 seasons in Philadelphia as the Flyers coach, over a decade at North Dakota. There was a bet on here, Elliot, that I had with a listener earlier in the week. He guaranteed Seattle was going to do exactly what Vegas and was going to go all the way to the Cup final in their first year. And I said, I bet you're wrong. We put our hair on the line, which I never do. And he has just called in the last 10, 15 minutes and has backed out on the bet. He does not. He's
because
underwhelmed.
Because of Haxtell, right?
He's underwhelmed.
Because it's not a big name. Yeah.
Yeah, by the hire.
Wow.
So, yeah, what do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I hope that someone else decides to step up so this challenge can continue. That's my initial reaction.
Agreed.
Yeah, you know, I have to say I've seen a lot of similar reaction. You know, it's kind of funny how it works. Like, that was the only name that didn't get out. I got some notes in the last couple days that maybe it wasn't going to be Tocchet, that it was possible they were going to look elsewhere. And then I started thinking maybe it was going to be Tony Granato. And then this morning, someone said to me, start looking into Dave Haxtell. And someone else said to me, find connections between Haxtell and Francis. And it was, they were with Team Canada together at the 2019 World Championships. And, you know, I was pretty sure I had it, but, you know, there's always that nagging doubt. And I couldn't nail it down 100%. So that was a bit disappointing. But they did a really good job of keeping it quiet. It actually really surprised me. Ron Francis is a vault. But it's very tough for things like this to keep it tight, and they did. On the overall situation, I am a little bit surprised. There's no question about that. I think that, you know, Haxtell, when he was in Philadelphia, he stepped into a situation where there were a lot of established players there, and I think at times there was some pushback on some of the things that he wanted to do. And this is going to be a different situation. I also think there's, you know, the world is littered with coaches who didn't do great their first time out, and they did a lot better their second time out. And I'm very curious to see how Haxtell is. He's very cerebral. He's not a very emotional guy. I think in sports you have to be emotional at times. You have to use emotion to push your players. You know, Laviolette, who you guys saw well, he was a master of that. Very good at that. That's the one thing I would say about him is he needs to learn the emotion a bit more.
Yeah, we learned when Peter Laviolette took his gum out of his mouth and took a step down on the bench.
Yeah, everybody was in trouble.
You better get out of the way. Get out of the way. Clear the area. And if you're a ref, don't skate over there. Just turn around and, you know, show him your back. I wouldn't go over there. I also said this last hour. Elliot, you know, we love raucous atmospheres. We love crazy atmospheres. Certainly, we've had big moments in Bridgestone Arena. You love it. You love the fans. You love the passion. You love even the blue-collar mentality where everybody's just crazy and they're going nuts. Nassau Coliseum provides that. But I've got to be honest. That was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen after a game concluded where the home team pushes a series to Game 7 in a thrilling overtime goal, 68 seconds in, and you reward your home team. You're so thrilled and over the top by throwing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of beers on the ice where the players skate off because they felt unsafe. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly Mensa, I will say that. We're probably lucky in a lot of ways that Tampa didn't win that game and they weren't getting the whichever bowl they were getting, the trophy for winning the conference. That could have been really ugly. I think we're really fortunate that that happened. It wasn't a great, I mean, watching the games from there have been spectacular. and we're really going to lose something as part of our league when that building goes away. You know, that was really the first place where I watched a playoff game this year, and I said, holy cow, do I miss not having fans in the building, and realized how septic some of the Canadian games really looked with no fans. And, you know, antiseptic. But I just look at it like, we're lucky it went that way. I'm sure it won't do that again. We can't have that again. But I wouldn't want to temper what that building has meant for the playoffs. Definitely a bad ending.
Yeah, no.
Great run there. Yeah,
I mean, if that's the last ever game there, yeah, no, you don't want it to change. But, my goodness, whenever you've got, what was it, Eberle doing the post-game interview on television, which typically is done on the bench or in between the benches, he's doing it down the tunnel because he doesn't feel safe. It's ridiculous. That's his crowd. That's not,
I know,
because,
you know,
they lost.
I kind of wondered if, like, one of those players would pick up one of the beers and drink it, to be perfectly honest.
That would have been a great move. How do you think this is going to play out tonight in Montreal? This has got an, I mean, gosh, they've got an opportunity to be that example that we always bring up, right? Just get in and you never know what can happen. They've got the opportunity to be that team like the Blues, and we can state all the other examples of, you know, that surprise team that had the least amount of points that gets in and gets all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Do you think they can do it?
I think they can. I think they've really frustrated Vegas. Looks like Leonard's going to play tonight in goal. They've really frustrated Vegas. You know, it was funny, like, some of the Canadian viewers got mad at me the other night because I started referring to Montreal as Islanders light, and they're mad that I'm disrespecting them, that they're just not, that I'm saying they're not as good as the Islanders. I mean, you just cannot please people. I think they've discovered an identity. They make it hard to get through them. They do unbelievable in the neutral zone. You know, they've got four big, strong defensemen that make it very hard to get to the net. And they've got talented guys that if you make a mistake, they can put it in your net. And then they've got Price, the human eraser at the end. It's an outstanding combination of guys. And what it does is they've all bought in. Like, they don't do what they're not supposed to do because they know if they don't play as a group, they're not going to win. They have to be united. They have to play together. And they are committed to doing that. They have really frustrated Vegas. You can see that last game. I mean, you guys know what the Vegas home crowd is like. They took that crowd out of the game in game one in Vegas. They blew it by taking too many penalties. They took that crowd out of the game in game two in Vegas for two periods, and they held on for dear life in the third, and they won. That game last night, or the other night, they took them out of the crowd almost the entire game. Vegas did get a goal, but I never felt in that one that Montreal was really threatened. They frustrated Vegas. They're having a hard time getting through them. I still think Vegas can come back and win this series, but I don't know if I've seen, like, when Vegas was down 2-0 to Colorado, I got a text from someone there who said, I think we're still going to be fine. I think they're a bit more worried this time.
Elliot Friedman is with us, and Elliot, it brings up a great philosophical question that I know is getting debated, and it probably has every year that this happens. You have two really tight-checking teams that play the great team game that maybe lack the individual talent against the juggernauts that everybody would long to have that play the exciting brand during the regular season. So how do you feel? Like, I know the Predators are sort of moving towards that Islanders/Canadians model is, you know, maybe out of necessity, right? The way they have to. It's maybe easier to build that way than build a real stacked team. But how much do you think who wins this thing is going to influence how teams build themselves?
Well, I the way I look at it, I don't think a lot has changed in hockey. I think you almost have to have two teams. A team that can win in the regular season and get you into the playoffs, and a team that can get you through the playoffs. And the reason is, guys, I think it's impossible to play 82 regular season games like you play the playoffs. Yep. You know, the most games you can play to win the Stanley Cup is 28. And could you imagine trying to play 82 games like teams play the 28 games in the playoffs? You can't do it. You're not as committed. The travel's tougher. The schedule's tougher. You're playing different opponents. You just have bad nights. And in the playoffs, all of that goes away. Your commitment to detail is tighter. You've got one opponent. The travel's much easier. The focus is there. It's a different beast. Nobody takes a night off. Or if you take one, then it's going to be 20 more before you take another one, really. And I just think you have to have teams that can play both ways. I think they should expand the playoffs. The league doesn't like the idea. And one of the reasons they say is because it actually takes work. 50% of the teams make the playoffs. You have to earn your spot. And I think that's true. But I don't think it's as hard to play, anywhere near as hard to play, in the regular season as the playoffs. And, everybody gets on the refereeing, and there have been some things I really haven't liked this year. But I'm one of the people who really thinks that the people that change the most are the players. Like, they will do things to each other in the playoffs that they will not do in the regular season. And I just think you can't win without great players. You have to have skill, but you also can't win without a great team commitment and a willingness in the playoffs to make life very hard on the other teams. Like Tampa, and I've talked about this with you guys, they're dirty. Everybody thinks they're this skilled team. They are a skilled team, but they'll kill you. And they've got a lot of tough guys who play nasty hockey, and that's the way you got to win in the playoffs. The playoffs aren't for wimps. You don't win with wimps, with wimpiness in the playoffs.
Elliot, David Poile has been in Nashville since day one. He's made a lot of trades over the years. I think everybody would gravitate towards, he couldn't stand trading Shea Weber, but it was the contract that remember the offer sheet with Philadelphia. That's what I think he could live with. And that's part of the reason he was interested, and obviously a very unique player in PK Subban coming back. The other guy that I would think, if you polled him, of who he just hated the idea of trading, but he needed to do it, with Seth Jones. I know you've read, you've been writing some on this. We know his future is going to be an interesting one here with 1 year left on his contract. I'm not suggesting at all that he could come back to Nashville. It'd be a great dream. I think David Poile would love to figure out a way to do it, but it doesn't really look like it's in the cards. But what do you think is next for Seth Jones?
Well, I think he's going to be traded. I think the biggest question is it going to be a team that's trading for him for a long time or 1 year? Like, I would be curious about a team like Colorado, if they would look and say, we'll do it for a year. And I would look at a team like Philadelphia, and I would say, all right, we'll do it for a long time. And I think there's teams considering it. Now, it's a bigger risk if you're doing it for a year, obviously. But if you're Colorado, you could look at Seth Jones as being a piece of the puzzle to win the Stanley Cup. And I think that's a reasonable bet for the Avalanche to make. So to me, I think the biggest question is, who sees it what way, and how does that drive the market? Because I do think that Colorado will not be the only team that will consider it on a one-year thing. It's just that, does it make it harder for the Blue Jackets to get what they want if it's a one-year thing instead of a long-term thing?
While we're on the subject, what are your thoughts on down the road as a player for PK Subban? He's been a little bit out of sight, out of mind from the Nashville perspective since he's been traded. He's only played against the Predators twice, right? When they played New Jersey 2 years ago, and obviously didn't come close to seeing him this year. But I think we're all a little bit mystified that he just has not been able to find that top level game of his. Where do you think there'll be a resurgence here? I know he's going to be, we all know that he'll be a lights out commentator whenever he wants to be, but I got to feel like he thinks there's more in the tank as a player.
Well, first of all, about PK, I think he's got a ton of pride, right? And I think he cares a lot. And I think anytime you have that, that's important. I think one of the biggest issues with PK, and I think it's one of the reasons that Nashville traded him, was, I think they were worried about, his long-term kind of his back and where that was going to go. And, PK has built himself up to be stronger. And I think some people felt he was too bulky, that it put more pressure on his back and it kind of slowed him down a bit. and I understand he's worked to become sleeker, you know, maybe seeing a bit of a change of that, and hopefully that will help him. You know, I still think he's an incredibly talented guy. I still think he has a chance to be a difference maker. I just think that, you know, any time as a defenseman when your back becomes a problem, that's a problem. And I think it became one for him, and I think he has to kind of change. He's kind of worked on changing his training, and I think that will definitely help him.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, our weekly chat with him. Our buddy Adam Vingan of The Athletic did a poll with Predators fans and asked 12 questions of kind of where they were with this team. And one of them was, ideally, how should the Predators approach this offseason? 76.4% said a soft reset, tweak the core, fill the roster holes with prospects. And that was actually the way that I voted too. Now, that's easier said than done. We've talked with you before. We know some of the contracts that these Coors players have. But if that is the route that David Poile goes this summer, what do you believe is the best way for him to go about maybe moving some of those core players while also looking at the future and the contracts that he has to take care of as well?
Well, I'm one of the people who believes that Ekholm wants to come back. So my biggest question is, what does that look like? You know, what are we talking about here? The other question I have is, what is the contract that you can move that maybe you don't want to move and it hurts you a bit to do it, but it allows you to start your reset? Who is that on your roster?
I mean, I would say it's probably Arvidsson or Ellis.
Is that fair to say? Don't you think, Chase? We debate that daily.
Yeah.
It's a revolving door, but there's a lot of different ways you could do it, but none of them, like you said, Elliot, it's going to be painful, whatever it is.
Ideally, you're trying to move one of the $8 million guys, but that's much easier said than done.
That's extremely hard to do right now. Like, that's really going to hurt you to do that. In the sense that what you're going to have to do to make that happen. You know, I wrote about Ellis last year. I heard Ellis was really hurt and upset by that. Again, though, to me, it says the respect that he has as a player. I don't think there's a lot of long-term contracts that teams could move right now. I think his is one. People really respect. You know, Arvidsson's a really interesting one because I think he could be had. I just think that the issue with Arvidsson is, you know, he hasn't been the same player since the injuries. I don't think the money is a question. I think the term is a bit. But he hasn't been the same since he got hit a couple of times. And, you know, I don't think anybody ever questions his courage or his will. It's just, can he do the things that he made his career doing? So I could see the possibility of that. Just the question of his effectiveness. Ellis, I absolutely believe there are teams out there that would happily trade for Ellis. I just, you know, like I said, I think that he was upset by the speculation last time. And I think that's something that's very delicate for Nashville to manage.
So along those lines, you know, another thing that we have discussed is this team needing that just shut down forward that can score goals, that can be the superstar, that is not easy to find. They don't grow on trees.
Nope.
We all know that.
Nope.
I think many have thought that Forsberg was going to become that, but he's battled injuries. He hovers around, like, when healthy, probably a 30, 35 goal scorer. Maybe he cracks 40. One of these days, but he's got to play a full season to be able to do that. Do you think that a trade involving Ellis and more could potentially result in getting a forward similar to that, what we're talking about?
It could. The thing is, like I think, if, for example, let's just say for argument's sake, since we're playing hypotheticals, if Ellis was to get moved, I think you'd be getting something very significant for him. Like, the only way I think he's getting traded is if you look at the deal and you say, oh, okay, I get it. And like I said, he's got a lot of respect. You know, people really like and respect his game. They respect his personality. They respect his preparation, everything he brings. So I would think if that was to happen, you would get something where you'd say, oh, okay. Or there'd be another corresponding move that came with it where you'd say, oh, okay. Like one of the things I think Nashville did last year was they waited out in the summer. Like you made a lot of your signings late. Granlund and Holla, for example.
Right.
And like I don't think David Poile ever does nothing for a reason. That says to me that he was waiting on some other things. You know, I've told you that I said, I think last week that I think Killorn might have been one of them. I thought that they dipped their toes on Marchessault from Vegas. You know, the other one that I do wonder about is if he doesn't stay in Boston, which I think he'd like to do, you know, I wonder, like Taylor Hall would make sense for you guys. Now, I don't know if any of that's going to happen, but I saw a GM last year who waited and waited and waited, saw some other things that didn't unfold and said, okay, I'm now going to plan B. But I would think that he's looking at it similarly this year. I think he's got some things that he's going to swing at, and he's going to see what comes his way.
I know this is one of those open-ended questions that you could really ask every year for every team, but do you view this as the most important offseason in David Poile's tenure, of knowing where this team has been, where they are right now, and the resurgence that we saw in the second half of the season, that he has to get this right?
Well, I think that I don't know if I would say this one is the most important. I think it might be the most interesting. You know, unfortunately, a lot of decisions that he, like, there's probably decisions he wants to make that he knows he can't make. Would he like to move Duchesne? Yes, I think he would. Would he like to move Johansson? Yes, I think he would. But that's not necessarily going to be possible, right? So then it takes you to, okay, what can I do? And, you know, we've talked about some of those names, and it's very important to get those things right. There's no question about it. But I would say that, you know, the summer you guys traded Weber, that's the biggest decision he's ever made, I would think. And, you know, look at, you know, like, I don't know if you could ever make anything that would ever be bigger than that. I just remember how seismic that was. So the one thing I think about Poile is he won't be afraid. He'll say, I've done bigger than this, so I know how to deal with it. I know how to handle it. I wouldn't say it's your most important offseason, but I would say it's one of your more interesting, because I think the choices that he's going to have to make might hurt a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Elliot Friedman here with us from Sportsnet. Elliot, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next Thursday.
All right, guys. Take care. See you next week.
Yep, have a good weekend. Elliot Friedman, 31 thoughts, soon to be 32 thoughts, does a fantastic job for Sportsnet. A lot to discuss, including the results of Adam's poll. I was reading through it and found some of them interesting, so we'll discuss that. But first, Darren, you're going to tell us about DraftKings.
My favorite sportsbook. Yeah, I am. And it's also America's top-rated sportsbook. I love using DraftKings Sportsbook. It's easy to navigate, which is important to me. Also has plenty of instructions for new bettors. Willie, if you ever became a new bettor, they've got instructions for that. And nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Listen to this great offer they've got right now. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $150 in site credits. So all you have to do is pick any basketball team that's still in contention, bet $1 of your own, and if that team wins, you win $150. In site credits. Don't forget, they've also got great offers, great odds, and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. It's safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. All you have to do is download that top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, turn $1 into $150 in site credits and free site credits. All you have to do is pick a basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you claim $150 in free credits. That promo code, again, 1025GAME for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Wagers paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.